what you are basically. Deep, deep down, far, far in, is simply the fabric and structure of existence itself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
Honestly expressing yourself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
Fabric and structure of existence itself.
Hi everybody, welcome to the Parallel Mic Podcast, episode number 53. I'm your host Mike and thank you so much for joining me. Tonight we've got a great guest. It's Jason Liasartos, who has his own show called Outside the Box with Jason Liasartos. You can find that over on Rumble, Odyssey, BitChute also. Now, listeners of the podcast will know I'm a regular guest on Rick Moon's TNT radio show, which is where we have these live interviews. I often talk about finance related to my other show, the Parallel Systems Broadcast. But recently I had an interview, and before me there was another guest called Jason Liasartos, and that's where I came across Jason. And I listened to what he had to say, which normally I don't have time to do. I'm getting ready for my own interview, but I was well prepared. So I sat down, listened to the first guest, Jason, and I thought, this man is erudite. He's smart. He's very much in tune with what's going on in the world. And he also understands that this is actually a spiritual battle that we're all in. It's not about earning money now. It's not about greed. It's not about me, wants, narcissism. It's actually about coming together and trying to think of visions of a better future. Not taking the black pill is what it's all about. So I thought Jason's voice needs to be shared with my audience. It's the perfect audience because everyone listening to this show has those same views. We're refusing the black pill and we're deciding to live with hope. So that's why Jason's on the show and we have a great conversation. We cover lots of topics. We especially talk about taking control of our own life, self-discipline, getting rid of the things that no longer serve us. So we talk about giving up alcohol, for example. So I think there's a lot here for people. I think you're going to enjoy this one. Members, please head over to parallelmic.com to listen to the full episode. If you're not a member yet, please consider joining us. It supports the show and gives you access to the full length episodes. Also, for people who are seeking to protect their wealth and get themselves and their families ready for the coming financial flood, I'm available for wealth preservation consultations. You can find out more information on the website, but this is a consultation with me where we discuss how to protect our assets, whether that's pensions, bank deposits, what to do with our stock portfolios. We go through it step by step. So if you need some support with that, please check out the consultations tab on the website at parallelmic.com. In closing, I hope you're all well, healthy and reasonably happy. And if you're not, this episode might help you get there. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see each and every one of you in the next one. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Parallel Mic Podcast. Today, we are joined by a new guest. It's Jason Liasartos, who runs Project Humanity. He is a podcast host. He's also an artist. We'll get into all of that today, Jason. It's your first time on my show, Jason. And maybe you could just begin by telling listeners who you are and what inspired you to start speaking, doing a podcast, and what brought you to the listeners' ears today.
Well, what a story it is. I mean, I wouldn't want to terrify people with my story. It's been up and down. I've been shot at in Cape Town, homeless in Florida. I've gone in bins for food, but that's not the point of what you asked me to say. But I've led a very interesting life, you know. And I'm an artist. I wanted to write, Mike, for years, you know. And I was pregnant with a book, as we all are. And my book came out 12, 13 years ago. That's it there. The Emergency Transformation as Human Beings as the Solution to the World's Problem. Because that transformation, you know, if we all change our frequency, then everything changes, as you know, you know. But so I wanted to write the book. I wanted to speak. I actually had terrible stage fright as a young age. And I always felt scared to speak. You'd never believe it now. But so I started hosting conferences, Mike. That's what I did. And we had conferences with people like Vandana Shiva on, you know, Robert David Steele, ex-CIA, and a plethora of different amazing guests. And we used to do conferences about a better world for humanity and changing our frequency and be an artist. Because I'm an artist, stop me when you want me to stop. But because I'm an artist, I've got an art gallery down here in Totnes in Devon, and I just sell my own paintings. I like to give, not analogies, it's the truth, that we are all magnificent artists and midwives of a new world that literally wants to be born, but is waiting within the womb of possibility to be born. That's the way I put it. But there's another system which has got its boot on the cervix of that birth. And so I do feel that we're very pregnant with ourselves as humanity. So that was the whole thing of me wanting to start speaking, really, because I always felt the injustices of the world, Mike. And I'm sure we're going to talk very positively on here about change and transformation, and that we are magicians ourselves and great artists of the future ourselves. We are the ones that create this canvas, each person, whether it's in your own life and everything. But I really felt those the pain in other people, Mike. I'll be really honest with you. I always felt the pain in other people. I always, even when I was in school, I felt very trapped, and I felt this isn't right. Somehow I couldn't work it out when I was a kid in school. All I knew is I wanted to leave there and go home and be free to play in the woods. But I knew there was a sort of a brainwashing going on there, and I felt it very intimately. And so I never thought I'd be doing what I'm doing now, but I was just getting on with my life and then got into drugs and, you know, like teenagers do, you know, you go along and you're just growing up and, you know, and your life goes along. But I pulled myself back to this. It's a long story, but I had a couple of very fascinating experiences where I was really touched and moved, call it spiritually or whatever. I try not to use the word God too much because everyone, like, you know, believes in different things, but I had a couple of amazing experiences and a few awakenings, and I knew then there was something other than this heavy spacesuit. And I went on another quest then, and I started reading a lot and looking for people who could help me. And I was very fortunate, you know, that people were tossed into my path, Mike, you know, beautiful people, wonderful people who've helped me so much, you know, and held my hand through the eye of the hurricane of being a human being in a spacesuit. So my whole thing is a better world for humanity, that we are really in a new epoch. And the word epoch comes from the Greek word epoche, which means stoppage, actually. You know, I'll stop my little rant in a minute, but the word epoch, if someone says we're in a new epoch, the word epoch comes from the word Greek word epoche, because I'm Greek, you know. And that means stoppage, which is strange when you think of the word epoch. But I always say that in a pregnancy, there's always a time when the pregnancy stops and the birth begins, and that I believe that that epoch word stoppage is where we are now, and a lot of people feel that. But back to your original question, because you can see I'm getting carried away as I usually do. I was always concerned with the system that we live in, and I knew that it could be an absolute utopian paradise compared to the slavery and debt based system of short term greed and power that it currently is. But in one sense, I suppose that's strangling us to the point where it's waking us up, you know. St. John of Patmos used to hold people's heads under the water, Mike, yeah, until they were almost dying, thrashing around, and then he let them up. And that was the transformation. But I'll put a caveat in. I'm not one of these people that says, yes, the pain is good. We need pain to grow. No, no, no. If someone's hitting you with a stick and you can get out the way and either hit them back or choke them off, then you've got to do that as well, yeah. But that's how I got to this. I always had a feeling that I wanted to try and do my best to help people to be, you know, remember to be happier and stand in their power. And I always wanted a better world for my fellow human beings. And I feel other people's frustration and pain. So I suppose some would call it the bodhisattvic vow, where you won't be enlightened and move on until everyone's moved on. So in a nutshell, I could elaborate much more, but that's a sort of little smattering of how I sort of started, I suppose, you know?
Yeah, that's a really nice opener, Jason. And, you know, we was recently on the same show, so you was on first and I was on second, and I don't normally get to listen to the first guest because I usually just jump in as it's my turn, but I did this time. It was actually the first time, and it was you speaking. And when I listened to it, I thought, you know, this really isn't the format for Jason. Jason needs a long-form podcast to really get out his ideas, because it was only about 15, 20 minutes, and I really liked what I heard. And then it got to the end of it, and I was like, I want to hear more. But then I was like, damn, I need to get ready. I'm on next. And it's fast and furious on the radio, but we've got a lot of time today. So don't worry about, you know, the length of your answers. I think that's how it should be. I think that's what listeners are here for, is to hear some like really well fleshed out answers. And what you said there is absolutely true. That's how I see it as well, that this old system's dying. I mean, that is why we're seeing these death rattles, all of the chaos and crisis. It's trying to reignite itself for another epoch. It's trying to take over the next epoch, but I don't think it's going to. Although I do think it's got the potential to take us somewhere really dark in the next 50, 100 years. It will end, but it's how it ends. And like you said, we could go to utopia. God gave us everything we need right here to live fantastic lives. There's enough food, there's enough land, there's enough space, there's enough resources. There's all the commodities that we need to trade and barter and live really good lives. And yet they've commoditized it and they've created this debt-based system, and they just keep trapping us in it. So I wanted to ask you, Jason, how do you think they managed to get us here? Like, is it the same people continuously just riding these waves of history where they keep going from empire to empire to empire? Because as far as I trace it back, it feels to me like it's just a very small few select group of people who have got really good at capturing the whole system. What do you think about it?
Ah, oh, that's a lovely question. Yeah, I can't wait to answer it. Not that I've got all the answers, you know, ask my wife, you know, but you know, I try and make light of the situation because I think it's good. Humor's good, you know, and I think we need to hold things very lightly as well and not get bogged down by things, you know. But back to what you were saying, to put a caveat in, I haven't got all the answers, but from our, we all have these intuitions and things, but if at a guess, I would say that this same thing's been going on for thousands and thousands of years. You could talk about off-world entities and the greys and how we're being controlled from another dimension. That is coming more and more now. As you've noticed, a lot more people are talking about that. Years ago, it was just David Icke talking about that, you know, and I've known David Fuch. I went to his first gigs 35 years ago. There was hardly anyone there. You know, I ran him on my show many times. But so that's becoming more normal now, but that's not to answer your question. That's not part of the question. I feel this has been going on for many thousands of years, Mike, and I'm not saying that it's all been so structured that the same people are always behind it, like a lot of people might say. I think there have been crashes and downfalls and, you know, vying for power, and one lot will kill one lot and the other one will kill the other lot. I don't think it's all like, maybe nowadays it's more of a pantomime that's structured for our eyes. We can get into that. But I think it's been going on for many thousands of years. So generally, the people with less ethics and morals and conscience, generally, which is the opposite of what it should be, could be, generally get into positions of power, because often the people that go up the political ladder have to ethically compromise and change their, they might start out with a better view and they want to change things, but generally they have to ethically compromise. So I think over the years, I think it's been the same type of psychopath or the same type of power greedy person. Like if someone came from another planet and said, what's going on here, you know, you'd have to agree that it was based on short-term greed, power, profit, and debt and control of humanity. Whether that's just an offshoot of the system, the control, it's a plethora of things, isn't it? But that is what it's based on. What it should be based on is short, long-term happiness, you know, joy for humanity. And I think what it is generally we're being run by the most unscrupulous people on the planet, who get into positions of power. I just spoke to Paul Craig Roberts, who was in the Ronald Reagan administration as a treasurer in the Treasury years ago. And I reminded him on my show. I said, once I asked you, Paul, I said to you, they're like the mafia, aren't they? He said, oh, no, Jason, because he's been in the government. He said, no. He said, these people are much worse than the mafia. With the mafia, you get a chance, and they're quite fair, actually. But this type of person or entity or stranglehold has been on humanity for a long time. If you go way back when there was people picking cotton or doing jobs and, you know, the people with more money and power and land, and they'd manipulate. My wife said once, they don't give you too much money. Excuse me. Or you wouldn't come back next week to work. So the system seems to be designed just to give you enough. And then, of course, you can make much more money and prosper, and maybe then you're the one to control other people. But it's not always bad money. I had this chat with Gerald Celente once, and we agreed it's not the money that you've got to say is terrible. It's what's done with the money and how the money often ethically compromises people. But yeah, I think it's gone on for a very long time, Mike. And it's a very sad thing, actually, that it keeps going, the same trajectory keeps going. It's got a tremendous momentum. And one of the things I talk about a lot now with my work, and I've written a lot about it in my book, is that is consequences and feedback loops and outcomes from decisions previously made with or without wisdom and vision. I mean, your podcast is created. Yes, there might have been random events and people helped you, or you manipulated it yourself. But generally, things are created through decisions made now create tomorrow. So my sadness is that most of the things we see now, whether it's war, peace, Gaza, happiness, sadness, generally comes from decisions previously made. Now, there are obviously nuances of that, and there's coincidence and things as well, obviously. But I think that's the sadness for me, is that it could be so much better if previous decisions were made with wisdom and vision for humanity. I don't think we could even hardly believe how wonderful it could be, you know?
It's really difficult to conceptualize what that world would look like. And people always say, well, who would run it? Who would lead it? What political system would we have? And I think it's really easy to imagine it on a small scale, like me, you, maybe half a dozen families living in a community. Jason's a carpenter, Mike's tending the fields, somebody's looking after the animals, et cetera, et cetera. Like, we could easily come up with a solution on a small scale. But as you expand that out, you always hit that problem eventually when you've got so many people. Maybe once you get past like a small town where it's like, well, how do we manage that system? And then you get these big systems, these centralized structures that come in, and then we create militaries and police forces, and then power gets usurped, and then you get to a debt-based system. And before you know it, you're back where we started. And I guess that is the problem of our time, is reimagining the world where we have some structures in there that actually serve humanity rather than these ones that can easily be usurped and go back to serving the same select group. And I said to someone recently, the richest people in the world don't measure their wealth in fiat money. They create fiat money. All of these people that we see, they're all like illusions. The Bill Gates, the Elon Musk, they're just agents of the people who actually run the system. And then we're convinced to be enticed and to chase after those pieces of paper. And it's just this cycle that we always go back to. So I think the money part of it is really key, going back to something that's sound. But ultimately, we also then have to have an idea of like, how do we achieve a system that actually works where they cannot get their grasp on it? And the only thing I can come up with is actually to take it back to the small scale and have people working together in communities and then just ignore their system and let it wither away. But I'm going to hand it back to you, Jason. How do you foresee it? What's your strategy in your own life? And how do you envision a future without them, without those people at the top of it? How do we get rid of them? Is it a case of we just let them die off and just start creating our own systems immediately?
Oh, well said, Mike. It's great, because I know that you've got a small holding or something, haven't you? Or something like that.
And yeah, we just live on our little farm. We've got our neighbors. But I mean, ultimately, I'm always trying to expand that. I mean, the goal for me is to live in a community, but I'm certainly not naive. I think we are going through a period of real changes, but I think there has to be personal changes. We have to be ready for that, because we're all so saturated in materialism. So then go back to living together. And Jason, I've met so many people that have tried to do that, and it's just failed so miserably. Communities have died. People have had affairs with each other's wives, and it just falls apart. So there is a change that has to happen within, and I'd love to get your take on that. But I'm just going to hand it back to you for that question that I just asked.
That's great to you speaking, Mike. That's why I like listening to you recently as well. I like you, you like me. No, but really, honestly, I love listening to you talk when I discovered you with the other guy. But it's multifaceted and multi-nuanced, isn't it? People getting on and everything. That's why I always come back to this thing of that people... I've been talking about government today, for instance, and I'll tell you what, let me read you something before I start ranting about this. There was a great old film called The Day the Earth Stood Still, right? And everyone should see it. It's a black and white, it's got Klaatu in it, and there's a guy called Mr. Carpenter in there. A spaceship lands. I won't go into the whole thing. But before he leaves, he says, the universe grows smaller every day, and the threat of aggression by any group anywhere can no longer be tolerated. There must be security for all, or no one is secure. This does not mean giving up any freedom except the freedom to act irresponsibly, right? So the reason I just wrote that down earlier on was because I've been talking a lot recently, which also sounds ridiculous in our current paradigm. See, it's got so complicated, Mike, and it's got such a trajectory, this slave system we live in, that whatever you do seems like pointless. It's like putting an umbrella up in a hurricane, you know? But by talking about it and thinking about it, then what we're doing is we're giving ourselves smelling salts, and the smelling salt spreads that people can see a possibility that it could be different, never mind anything else, yeah? So what I've been talking a lot about lately, which sounds like gobbledygook because it's so far-fetched, but I say, if you look at what's going on in the world, back to sort of what you said, that it becomes corrupted again, the new cycles of corruption and greed and control. There's always someone in a group that wants to control someone else, isn't there? There's always some power freak in a group. I've started many groups, you know, that usurps it for everybody else. And I think, if you look at the governments worldwide, not that they're, I mean, they've people above them controlling them, there's got to be sort of zero tolerance. Now, immediately people will say, hey, no, Jason, people are going to have free will. Yes, they have. But if you can imagine a system where we all go through the schooling system, we're taught straight away competition and to fight each other. I'm better than you. I'll get a better job if I'm smarter than you. I'll get a gold star, punishment, reward, punishment. So we're almost brainwashed through the system, Mike, to actually perform better all the time and be the boss almost, or be better than the other person and ultimately stand on their hands to get up the ladder. But I've been talking a lot about saying that, which is ridiculous again, I'll say it, that ideally any government or politician or president that was showing any nuance of aggression, now of course there's so much aggression, there's got to be aggression because they're all trying to fight each other, but in an ideal situation, then they would be quarantined and detained immediately to be rehabilitated, okay? One of my great mentors, he was very friendly with Joseph Campbell and Gene Roddenberry, with the maker of Star Trek. His name's Charles Muses, and I read all his books. He was very helpful. I knew his wife was helping me. Museos. And by the way, if anyone's done that work with that gentleman, please get hold of me, because I've never met anyone else who's read a lot of his stuff. And he used to talk about these things, Mike, you know, that it's gone so crazy and gone so far from that ethical alarm bell in each person, because look, we've all got an ethical alarm bell and moral compass within ourselves. It's something that's placed inside us, right? It's there by universe or nature or God. We know what's right and wrong, okay? And I gave an example once, if I had a bar of gold this big, you know, and I was on Trafalgar Square, and I said, who's going to get this off me? You'll never be prosecuted, and no one will ever know. Who's going to spit at me? No one will ever find out, and everyone will spit at you. And who's going to break my knuckles? Ooh, who's going to chop my fingers off with a machete? Who's going to kill a million people in Iraq? So what I'm saying is that money does tend to ethically compromise in a system where you need money, right? Because most people can't envisage a system without money. It's almost impossible to even imagine it in our current condition of being brainwashed into the system. But yeah, I agree with you, exactly what you said. I would say in the system now, as far gone as it is, and in a terrible situation that we're in, we planned with naturalearthecoliving.com. You can look on there. My wife's been working on it for years, and I'm not here to promote it because it's in its gestational state. It's waiting within the womb of possibility. We've almost got it going a few times. Got millionaires have come forward. Yes, let's buy the first farm. We'll have 10 polytunnels. Center of Transformation and Consciousness. We'll have small eco houses, and I got a farmer who will come in and take over the project. We'll have educational things, retreats, this, you know, all around raising our vibration. If you could create one little pod like that, Mike, because you were mentioning that, you know, how do you do it? It's global, isn't it? If you were to make one little pod like that that was very convincingly working, then you could recreate that as a template somewhere else. And my hope would be that once people sort of wonderful it is, and we'll come to people's insanity in a minute, by the way, and imbalances, right? That's the next thing to talk about, but I've got enough of my own, obviously. But and then if you could create that like that, and it was running in harmony, for instance, I used to live near Findon, and I used to go in there doing art classes, so I've seen how good and bad things can be in a community, okay? But then other people would probably then say, well, I want my feet on the land. And let's say people had come on the retreats and say, I don't want to go back to London. I don't want to go back to my old job. I hate it. We say, anyone else feel like that? Well, another 5 people, 10 people, you go back, sell your houses, and let's create the same template, buy another farm, and we got help for you. There's people who can do everything, who want to do those things, not like they are slaves. They want to do that particular thing of planting, of growing, and enthusiasm. I know so many people now, Mike, that can do all these things. There's teams of people out there ready to do it, right? And it's almost happened many times. And to end that off with what you said, which is the greatest problem of all, is we've gone mad as a species, yeah? So the first thing we've got to put right is ourselves. We've gone, it's a mental asylum world, and it's become normal. Most people don't talk about how they've gone mad, and then imbalances. And that is one of the greatest problems. If you say, what's the greatest problem which is preventing us all moving forward? It's the mind, you know? Because most things you see are created from mind, you know? You think there's something. It happens if you then back it with action. So the greatest threat to humanity is humanity's own mind. Oh, that's ridiculous, Jason. It's bombs and stuff. No. Humans' minds is the greatest thing we all forget to work on. And it's robbed from us when we're children, when we go to school. And we before you know it, you've lost your mind and you're just in your thoughts. And we're not taught to really be precision on our own compass and just have that peace and then treat other people like you like to be treated. But of course, bring money into it, bring competition into it and this kind of thing. And absolutely right, Mike, I'm right with you. Off it all goes again. You know, and the Indians sort of some of the traditions, they say, oh, don't worry, Jason, it's a wheel. We go through the madness and chaos, and then we all die and we come back and do it all again. It's fine. You know, you don't have to worry about it. It's all an illusion. But what a shame. We've got to stay in that revolving door of madness. Is it not time that we can leave that now? And I do truly believe we're getting close to that now. And I do believe there's forces that don't want that to happen. Clearly, you know, they want to keep people stupid, dumbed down, pissed, smoking ganja and just, you know, living day to day. They don't want people with visions and goals for a tremendous society, because that breaks their society, which is based on short-term greed and fear. But that's a tiny little rant about what you said, but I don't know if that was, I got anywhere near what you want, you know, what you wanted me to talk about. But that, unfortunately, we've gone mad as a species, and you're right. So we've done it here. We've tried that. And then someone will come in and say, oh yes, but you know, polygamy is the way, you know. I don't care. People can go with as many, I know lesbians and every gay people, everyone in between. And I've met many people on my travels and I love them all. It's just a spacesuit, whatever you shape or form you call it. But, you know, and then they'd want to do it that way. And then the Christians would come on and want to do it their way. Then the Jehovah's would want to do it their way. And then other people would want to do it their way. And, you know, and to monitor that strictly, Mike, is more control. So I get it. You know, oh, you're not telling me what to do. You're the leader. No, I don't want to be the leader. I want this to all symbiotically enhance itself and progress. But you find there's always control freaks. There's always people who want to control things. So, you know, back to what I said, the mind is the greatest thing. We've got to get our minds right and become sane again as a species.
Does that require a spiritual evolution then, Jason, that we, in our current frame of mind and in the place where we are, and you mentioned the Indians, they think we've got this yuga cycle and we go through the iron and the iron, bronze, silver, golden age, and it comes back round. And at least they do say that we're coming out of the lowest ebb. So if the cyclical time theory is the one you're going with, that's the good thing. We are coming out the lowest one. And I do believe we are going through that change. I do ascribe to cyclical time, but I'm not fatalistic in that we're stuck in a cycle. I think we can transcend it. But one way or another, it feels to me like we have to transcend where we are now. Like we have to have a different mindset, the materialistic mindset, the meism, the nihilism, the self-centeredness, where even our spirituality becomes another expression of that meism. It's all about my needs, my trauma, my past, me transcending, you know. And there was a great story, actually. It's in Valentin Tumin's Meditations on the Tarot, one of my favorite books, extremely hard book for me to read. I think I'm going to be reading that one forever. But he mentions a story about a very advanced spiritual guru in there. And he said he was one of the top spiritual gurus in the East, and he used to visit him. And they became friends. And this guy himself was extremely advanced. But he said one time he would start talking to the guy, and the guy was telling him about this really mystical experience that he had, Jason. He said it was beautiful and he felt like he was just touching the divine. He was so close to enlightenment. And Valentin Tumin said, I sat there and listened to all of this really verbose and like wordy language. And at the end of it, I was like, wow, that sounds amazing. And he said, and I believe that he had this experience, but I asked him a question. I said to him, well, that sounds great that you're at this level and you're doing this. But he said, what are you doing for other people? And he said, the guy's face just dropped and he went very silent. And he said, and he never spoke to me after that. He said, after that, he just completely blanked me. And he said, the guy actually died in a tragic accident about 3 years later. He said, and that was that, he was gone. And I thought that's kind of reflective of modern day spirituality, is that even that has kind of become tarnished with this self-centeredness. Though it's like, I mean, and at least the Christians, and I actually am a Christian in a sense, in that I believe in Christ and that he was a savior. But I think they got it right when they talked about the ethics of charity, of sacrifice, of actually going out into the world and doing stuff for others and not for ourselves. And I don't know where I'm really going with this one, Jason. I think we're just going to freestyle this interview and go back and forth. But it does feel to me like there needs to be a spiritual leap, and that's happening for some. The most empathetic and aware people are picking up on these new energies. They are making that leap and they're looking for allies, and almost like we're kind of being brought together like pieces on the chessboard. A lot of my listeners will know what I mean as well. But then there's also the people that are stuck in the old ways. And I don't know if they're going to make it through it or not. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll just perish with the old system. I'm going to hand it back to you, Jason. Do you feel like we have to have that leap and that we can do things to help ourselves break free from the old system and enter the new one? And you have to be careful doing it, because there are people out there who are going to exploit everything that I'm saying to try and take your money, take your wealth, and cheat you in some way. So we do have to be careful. There are charlatans out there, but I don't think you're one of them. And I know I'm not one of them. So let's talk real. Is there something people could be doing to help that transition?
Well, it just so happens that I have got something. All you need to do is this. Only £2,000 a session, right? And you can sit with me for 5 minutes and you'll transform. Anyway, no, I'm only joking. Jason,
there's absolutely nothing wrong with earning money as well. I mean, I meet so many people that work so damn hard doing 50, 60 hours a week. And I say, and sometimes people say, oh, well, yeah, but they charge for this, they charge for that. And I'm like, well, are they doing good work? Well, damn right, they have to pay their damn bills too, you know. And I'm sure those people who say those things are working for money because you need to survive, don't you, Jason?
Yeah, well said, boy. And the thing is, I've never really, I was in sales years ago when I was in sales, and I did quite well. It was about manipulating people's answers, really, and I'm not proud of it, you know. Thankfully, the product I was selling was good, so even if I did manipulate someone to sign the form, they were getting something good, even if they didn't want it that day. So that's another thing, but I'm ethically more sound now. However, I've been making loads of notes as you've been speaking, so I'll just go through them, really. About the spiritual leap, it's many things, and I've never been one to say I'm this... Because if I do a talk and someone's trying to sort of big me up and say, oh, he's great, I always say, look, see that little lady at the back, the one with the face that looks really tired? That's my wife. Ask her about whether I'm enlightened. I'm only joking. But you know, I don't want to people to think that I'm this way out sort of figure. Yes, I've looked at stuff. I trained in stuff. I've trained in shamanism. I've trained in Reiki and blah, blah, blah. But I'm not one of those guys that you will see floating around sometimes saying, yes, I'm so clever. Because listen, you just set yourself up for failure, guys. I've met a lot of gurus. There was a lovely lady, one of the best people that I've met that's been genuine. She said, you can be enlightened one day and wake up an asshole the next. So be really careful, everybody. Don't put yourselves on a pedestal. But I do believe that we are having a spiritual leap. So many people are talking about it, and it's the way that people can tap into that in themselves and see if they are having a spiritual leap is because the level of unbearableness, okay? And someone said to me once, the pointlessness you feel in your life, yeah? And if you're feeling that pointlessness and that unbearableness in your life, which I know a lot of people are, like, because they come in my gallery and speak about this, it's a bit of a hub like this. So if someone comes, I am getting to a point, but if someone comes in and says, I feel really depressed, I had two people in there the other day, both who wanted to kill themselves, okay? Two guys, yeah? And I know them both separately, and they both came in. No coincidence, right? The word coincidence, I believe, comes from the word to coincide, a coinciding of events, okay? A coincidence. So I believe those things happen. So if someone comes in and says, I'm really depressed, Jason, I don't know what I'm going to do, I can barely carry on, I make a joke. And I say, that's exactly how you should feel. Yeah? You probably heard me talk about it on Rick Munn's show. That's exactly how you should feel. What? I'm depressed. Don't make fun of it. No, That's a natural symptom from a healthy body and mind living in a system that's driving it mad. And it's been driving you mad since you were a little kid. You just got used to it. So if you're feeling like you want to break free from your situation, of course, that is the way you should. You shouldn't be working every day just to pay bills, you know. I still rent at my age. I'm 62. I still rent my house. And I'm not ashamed to say to people, I've made some mistakes with money. I should have my own house now and be really blah, blah. I haven't got my own house. I rent my house. I rent my shop. And sometimes it is a struggle for me. And sometimes it's great, you know. But what I'm back to that feeling of that spiritual shift. Yes, it is. And we are like caterpillars, really. And I know it's an old used analogy, but there was a guy called Wigglesworth who did an experiment with a caterpillar, with a caterpillar. It tied off its metamorphic glands. It wasn't a very nice thing to do. But it's a good analogy because fear ties off our metamorphic glands. So people want to progress and they want to move forward and they want to rise spiritually and move to another level, if you like. But often that fear is so entrenched in them of everyday shuffle and the anxiety. Fear chokes off our metamorphic glands and prevents us flying like a butterfly. And when I say flying like a butterfly from a caterpillar, I actually mean that. Flying like a butterfly, you can leave your body. You can move to other dimensions. I know because I felt it a little bit myself and I've looked at it a lot and I won't go into it here, but you can do that. And you can transcend this spacesuit and come back. The abilities that we've all got are astonishing, right? And I've met some very special people in my life that can tap into that, yeah? And I've been very lucky. But, yeah, I think we are going through a spiritual leap. There are things that you can do, like, for instance, I love Terence McKenna's work. I've looked at a lot of his stuff. He used ayahuasca, DMT. I'm not advocating it because the shamanic lady I used to work with, she said, do not do that. It can open up portals as well, and you can get trapped and stuck, and it can make things worse, and you can get entities attacking you. That's another whole story. But I actually myself did do ayahuasca. I did it at the time to escape booze, the addiction of booze. I was drinking most red wine most nights, like a lot of people do. I was dabbling, look at porn. I was drinking too much coffee, and I wanted a fresh start. So although the shamanic work I was doing and the help I was getting from people was helping me with that, I needed a death. I needed a death. And that's what I did ayahuasca for. And it was like a death for me. It wasn't a nice experience. It was heavy. But the next day, I never wanted to drink at all. I never wanted to look at porn. I never wanted to drink coffee. It was like it had cut the cords of it completely. And for 9 months, I went without drinking. And then, I don't know, you know, it's like you have a row with your wife or someone, and that's it, screw you, and you go stuff. But so there are things you can do with substances if you want to try and do that. I don't advise it. It's a very, very dodgy thing to do, but it can also work for some people. There's someone I know now who's urgently looking to try and find someone to do the ayahuasca with. But I think what where we are, Mike, really, is that I think we're in a recovery, yeah? It's like not to lend that to like the alcohol addiction and drug addiction, really, but it's more of a recovery back to what we've lost, you know? And I know that's true. That's not just my opinion. It's true. It is. And so it's a recovery back to what we've lost. It's a great recovery. And I do truly feel that we've neglected. We mustn't beat ourselves up when someone thinks, oh, I'm so stuck. I'm so unspiritual. No, blame the system. You've been entrenched in the system, you've gone to school, da da da, they've got you ready to have a job. You leave school and you're almost used to being subservient. Then your boss, you're scared of your boss just in case they fire you, or the government just in case they punish you, and the bank in case they punish you. So there's all these things that we've been brainwashed. So don't beat yourself up if you feel you're stuck and you feel your consciousness is not as high as it could be. But let's remember, it takes practice. And you can change things in a moment, yeah? There's an old saying I want to tell people, and this is it. The fastest thing is that which is already there. And it's very basic, but the consciousness and the level of gifts that you possess, they're there already. It's not something you have to try and get. It's something you've already got, but it can be like a locked door. And you've just got to find the combination and the key again. So never give up on yourself. And remember that all the things that have happened in the world, globally or personally, when I had that experience with me, it was like whoosh. It was like literally, it was like, well, it was just an amazing experience, and I felt an energy and an awareness and a higher intelligence around me, which nearly blew my socks off, and that changed me forever. And I've had some horrible experiences as well, where I've been sort of attacked by something that isn't quite so good. But I feel that's what we're doing. And when you said about doing good, I just look at my notes, I'm scribbling when you're speaking. When you're on about people doing good things that make themselves good, I first experienced that. So all these things can help to make you a better person. I used to go into the hospital serving dinners to dying people on the cancer ward, yeah? And I did that in my 20s. And I did it because I wanted to see suffering and I wanted to not be frightened of it. And actually, when you're working with people who are dying, it makes... When my father was dying, I used to write things, little messages to people saying, if you want to remember how to live, hang around people who are dying, you know, because we're all dying, really, not our spirits, yeah, but our spacesuits are deteriorating, you know. Mine's not so bad. I've had about 15 facelifts. This doesn't come cheap, man. You know, it's like, I'm only joking. But so that's what I used to do. I used to go and find people who were suffering and try and help them. I used to drive the help the aged bus. It was a selfish thing because it helped me. So help your brother across the road and you're there yourself. So part of the work I do to talk about finding that peace within oneself and finding a higher vibration within oneself and tapping into that nothingness, that silent mind. I'd love to talk about the mind more, because most people's minds are so noisy, they're terrified of their minds, so they don't look at it to try and find the stillness. Then by doing that, then slowly but steadily, or really fast, then we can tap back into that, you know. I used to do art classes with people who are really depressed and desperate and anxious. And I used to cut a piece of string and put it on their chairs before they came in. And they'd say, what's this? And I'd say, let's tie it in knots, you know. And we'd tie about 10 knots in it. And I'd say, well, now we're trying to undo it. And I'll say, that's what we do with ourselves. We tie ourselves in knots, you know. And but it's a big subject. And you've got the people in the spiritual circles who say, oh, well, everything's happening perfectly. What you resist persists. Everything's happening perfectly. You haven't got to resist anything. And the Buddhist type people say everything's an illusion. But I say it's not. I say it's a reality that requires drastic healing. And I believe that's what we've all got to remind ourselves of now, Mike, is that we are the midwives. If you're here now, there's people who haven't been born yet whose lives are going to be shaped by what you do now or don't do. So it's a huge responsibility. And someone said, if people don't care, I often make a bit of a laugh and say, well, if you believe in reincarnation, then you might come back and you know and land in a situation that you could have made better. So, you know, it's a big subject, but I'm just ranting away. And but yeah, I think we are in a tremendous space now where it's almost like, I think we've got to drain the fangs of our own poisons and recover. I think it's about recovery. It, like a big boozer who's in such a state, you've got to recover. You have, get yourselves fit, lift your vibration, eat good things and believe in yourself. And it's a responsibility. If we all do that, then the whole human orchestra changes, and then the crazy conductors can wave their sticks. And as much as they like, we'll be creating new systems with or without them. But hey, man, they're not going to go down easy. These people are quite mad. And who knows what's working through them, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting that you likened it to recovery. I used to say to people, the most well put together people that I met were people that had been through things like the 12 steps, that had been through recovery. And my career was in therapy too. So I was working mostly with young people, but when you work with young people in social work and counseling, you're always working with the family because they're young people. So they're living with a family, and the family is usually the cause of that young person's suffering and their poor mental health. Most of the kids that I worked with, their parents were on drugs, alcohol, out and out neglect, disabled parents who the young person was caring for. Maybe that young person had been sexually abused by a parent or by one of the uncles or whatever. So it was always a mess. You was always working with a really messy situation. So if you're working with a young person, you're also working with the parents, and you're trying to get them straight because you can't help that young person. Well, you can, but there's only so much you can do if their situation is so toxic at home that they have to go back to that every night. The best cure is to first and foremost, you work with the young person, but then you also try and fix that problem at home, so it gives them that fertile ground to become what they should be. So Whenever you got somebody who actually, an adult who actually had been through the 12 steps, had made it out, it's like you used to be in the room with them and be like, God, this person's so well put together. And of course, this is because they've done a ton of self-work, like decades usually of self-work. And they knew all of the flaws, they were so honest with themselves about who they truly was, how bad they could be. But then also they were now looking at how good they could be. And most people don't get that. They're like, what? The people who were the biggest disasters, like out and out alcoholics, wrecking the life, terrible people to the family and friends, are the most well put together. And it's like, yeah, because they're living consciously. Every day they wake up and they make the decision to do the right things that day. They know that if they mess up, it's like all the way back to square one for them. Like, you know, like that drink, is like you said, you had 9 months and then all it takes is that one day. And it's like, right, that 9 months have been erased and I'm back at day one. Now, each time you go around, it does get a little bit easier, I think, because you've got the lessons of the past one. But anyways, and I wanted to mention a book whilst we're on that subject of recovery. And listeners, if you want to do some self-work, this is a fantastic book. You don't have to have an addiction. You don't have to have any of those things. But I think this is a fantastic book. It's called A Gentle Path Through the 12 Steps, a classic guide, and it's by Patrick Cairns. And I've been through this book. It's basically a self-help book. It's like a workbook, but it's using the 12 steps. It's fantastic for people with addictions or without. And you basically go through your entire past. So it's a heavy piece of thing. It's not something you're going to rush through. You're going to maybe do a page every couple of days or a week, maybe a page a week. And I certainly wouldn't go through it if you're in a traumatic state, if you're feeling really low and down. That's probably not the time, because you're not going to have someone there with you to support you with the stuff it's going to bring out. But if you are in a good place, that's a great book and a fantastic start. And I think I completely agree with you, actually, that it really is about individual change right now. If we start to fix ourselves, then you're also going to start to contribute much more to your family, to your friends. They're going to feel that energy that you've now got. You've changed your energy. They're going to say, well, how have you done this? Or even just being around you will be more healing, because you're not going to have that amped up and stressed and angry energy. You're not going to get involved in discussions about nonsense like politics and stuff that doesn't matter. So I agree. And that's how I try and do it. It's like, well, I can't do anything for other people unless I'm getting myself right. And that's a daily commitment. And I mess up all the time, Jason. I mess up all the damn time. And then I have to reassert myself and say, come on, Mike, you need to get back on the right track, because the world is designed to make us fail. That's the problem. And there's so many demons they've put out there for us to all chase. I mean, I'm teetotal this year, right? So we got to New Year's resolution. And I said to my wife, this year, I'm going to go all year without drinking. This dry January stuff, I was like, no, that's useless. We need a whole year. And I wasn't drinking a lot last year. But you know what? Every time I had a drink, even if it was just one, the next day I felt spiritually flat. Like I just didn't have my energy. And I thought, how can I improve on last year? And I thought, well, that's an easy win, Mike. Just don't drink this year at all. And let's see what it does for you. You know, let's see if it helps you. And I think it is helping. I think it is.
I'm just leaping through my book to try and find a bit about booze here, you know, but because I wrote a lot about it because, I've struggled with so many addictions in my life. I can't tell you, you know.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, Jason, because I think it's considered one of those things that people don't want to talk about. And people say, I don't have a problem. And it's a couple of glasses every couple of nights. And it's like, yeah, that's still affecting you. I'm pretty in tune with my body from years of athletics and sports. And if I have one beer, I'm not the same person the next day. I don't think as sharp, especially doing something like this. If we was doing this interview and I'd been drinking yesterday, I won't be as mentally acute. And physically, I'm not as good, you know, if I want to do a physical sport. So I'll hand it back to you. I'd love to, you know, hear about your kind of journey with that.
Oh, God. I've just run the gauntlet of addictions, really. And then I still get nosebleeds. I saw the sad sight the other day of kids here in, I live in Totnes in Devon, and they were sniffing ketamine. And I know other people who have sniffed ketamine, who they've screwed their bladders up and their bodies up. And I used to sniff amphetamines, you know, a lot. And I still get nosebleeds out of my left nostril sometimes. And if you look, I'll show you all the gory details. A lot of people who know me would never see me do this, but I want to do it to help people who've got addictions. If you look at my eyes, my left one, you might not be able to see it, is a little bit more sunken than my right one, because I was always doing it up that side, you know. And I was in quite a bad state. We were doing LSD. We were doing stoned all the time, pissed all the time. This is before I was even 18, 17, you know. And then I escaped off to Cape Town, where my mother was and my stepdad and my sister. And then I got off that, but then I was doing just smoking ganja all the time and getting pissed all the time. So, you know, like most young people do. The problem is it's become normal, Mike, you know. So you know, now some people would say, well, that's the initiation that people have got to go through to grow. You know, I had a guy in my shop the other day saying, yes, but we need this pain, you know, to help us grow. And I said, well, I'll hit you with a stick then. How's that, you know? Look, if we can not do it, fine, but we're victims of victims to a great degree. I know people who have suffered terrible things. My friend was, he was doing all sorts of crazy things, and he was abused by his father. He was sodomized by his father. His brothers were sodomizing him. His mother was getting involved. And I was at his funeral a few years ago. He hung himself. He'd had enough. That was it. I'm out of here. Good for him. You know, I wish he hadn't, because I think he could have done a lot of work with people, because he really knew about depression and despair, you know. So, but it was his path. It's his choice. But yeah, with this thing, Mike, absolutely, with the booze, it needs to be talked about more. And also, okay, but there's a fine line. I don't want to be like a Jehovah's Witness or a sort of fanatical religious person who's trying to convert everyone they speak to. So there's a fine nuanced line, isn't there? You know, and someone said to me,
sorry for interrupting. I just wanted to just throw this in, because I know you'll know what I'm speaking about. During COVID, the first thing we noticed when we went to the supermarket was all of the booze was right there as we got in. And all of the booze that was usually premium expensive, it was all on offer. So they know what it does to us. I mean, George Orwell spoke about it in his book. Whether you think George Orwell was working for us or against us is another matter. But they did talk about alcohol. So it does have a spiritual component to it, I think, doesn't it?
Definitely. And it, people say, oh, well, yeah, not so much people looking at this chat. But a lot of people who might not be thinking like we think it, in some ways, they'd be saying, oh, here they go again. They're looking for a conspiracy and everything. But no, if you trace it back to what the Rockefellers, I like Jay Dyer. He's a great comedian, and he's got rows and rows of books about them saying this kind of thing, you know. And if you look back far enough, what did they do to the Red Indians, you know, the American Indians? Booze and coffee, and they put chicken pox in the blankets. So they've always controlled people with booze, you know. And like you said, the churches were shut. The off licenses and the strip joints were open in COVID, you know. But yeah, absolutely, Mike. And the saddest thing for me is it seems like an initiation. And I've talked about it a lot in my book. Most people start drinking when they're teenagers because it seems to be that rite of initiation. It's like, come on, we're going to go and get some cans and we'll spew up in the lane. And, you know, I'm going to drink. And then you're a man and you're grown up. Some people don't, you know, my wife didn't, right? But with me, everyone was doing it. So what are you going to do? Be the odd one out, ha, 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 you're not drinking. And kids of like 12, 13, they start to get pissed. People say, well, I'll get over yourself, Jason. You're looking for utopia. But the sad thing is, it is a poison. And this is the thing to remember. I wrote about it in here. It's that much, if you want me to read it. But I wrote about it in my book, because alcohol, the drug of disaster, you know. And I said to you, I'll just read the first paragraph. Here is a truth which will come as a surprise to some people, and that is, for all its sophistication in the fine wine circles, alcohol is nothing more than actual poison that's rotten, rancid grapes and grains that have fermented and gone off and make you dizzy and ill. So most people think it's this sophisticated thing. Okay, there's some things in red grapes that are good for you. But let's remember something. You I used to drink a bottle of wine easy in a night, right? That was nothing for me. If my wife had a half a bottle of wine, she'd be in hospital, right? So you become resilient to any addiction, you know, and it's become normal, you know. You know, if you went into a shop and said, or if you said to someone, hey, guess what? I only have heroin on the weekends, you know, or I only sniff a few lines on the weekend, they'd say, hey, man, you've got a real problem. You need help. But if someone says, well, I only get drunk on a Friday and Saturday, or I only have a couple of glasses of wine every night, it's become normal. And to give you an example of that, I looked outside my shop one day, there was a woman there, Mike, and she was a regular. I see her on the street, and she was drinking out of a full bottle of red wine, like that. And she was muttering to herself, and there was people in the bistro next to me drinking glasses that were half a bottle of wine, right? And they were looking at her with disgust, and I thought to myself, wow. I've said many times that don't look down at people who are drinking on the streets, because that's you tonight on your settee, yeah, doing exactly the same thing, right? But because you're not drinking out of a bottle in the street, you know. But it's a terrible addiction, and it's got the world trapped. Now, I'm not going to be one of those recovered sort of, you know, preachy people who talks about booze, but the truth of the matter is, it's got most of the world trapped. It's ubiquitous, it's everywhere. It's the only legal drug, legal or illegal, that if you want to stop or you're trying to stop, people think there's something wrong with you, right? Me too. My own family at Christmas, I said, hey, I've stopped drinking. I wanted to do it before I was 60. I'm 62 now. I've finally done it, and I know I'm out of it. You know, I just don't want to do it anymore. And one of my cousins looked at me plumb in the face with a glass of wine, and she said, "That's really strange, right?" It's like there's something wrong. She didn't say this, but it's almost like there's something wrong with you. No, there's something right with me. I don't want to put that poison in my body because it is poison. It makes you dizzy and makes you dizzy. And you get used to it, you know? And it's like, it's crazy, Mike. But this is where we're at. The children go through it. Most kids start drinking when they're teenagers and they never stop until they die. And that's a tragedy, in my opinion. It's legal. And I'm not saying it should be illegal because free will and choice, yeah. But that's what we do. Kids go through the schooling system and they come out the other side. And that's generally what happens, you know? It's a tragedy. It really is. It's a big thing. And addictions aren't talked about enough. I talk to a lot of people behind the scenes about porn addiction. If we could give a figure on this show now of the amount of women that are in bed at night and their husbands are downstairs looking at porn, okay, we would be staggered. It's an epidemic. And there's people, women upstairs that want intimacy and the men are downstairs doing what they're doing before they go up. And I know a lot of people that are doing that. And if that is a tragedy, it really is. It's an absolute tragedy. But again, it's great. They want you to do that. They want you to be out of sync in your addiction, in addictive states and doing stuff like that. So you're not focused and clear and you haven't got that spiritual clarity that we all need. And but it's coming back. I think sometimes without saying, oh, look at the Indian thing, we've got to go and we've got to crash and burn and then we come back and then we crash and burn. No, we've learned enough about suffering. Let's get out of that revolving door. Let's not get stuck in the map. But let's face the fact that these terrible addictions are something we've got to move through and discard, you know, not get trapped in them.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a pattern emerging here. We're talking about things that take us out of our emotional and spiritual connection. You know, that's what the alcohol's meant to do. That's what the porn's meant to do. That's why they make it so easy to access, because it takes you out of having true human connection. You're not the same when you do those things, and they know that, and that's why it's there. That's what it's for. Now, I'm not somebody who's an absolutist and is like, listen, you should never, ever touch alcohol. You should never, ever do this. Some people are, but you know what? If I go out on holiday, Jason, if me and my wife would love to hike the mountains, we'll do like 10, 15-hour days sometimes in the mountains. Oh, there's nothing better than at the end of that day, sat in that bar together, having a pint and just laughing and talking about the old times, the things we've done together. That's an experience. And life isn't meant to be perfect 100% all the time, where you never, ever make a mistake or you never, ever have some bad food or bad drink. That's not what we're talking about here. It's that normalized addiction, that normalized day-to-day drowning out of your true self, of your spirit. You can call it your spirit if you want. And we've just been conditioned to do it, whether it's TV or drugs or adding things to our life that harm us or harm our relationships. And I think that's what we need to start erasing. So that book, like I said, if you're interested in just doing some self-work, then that book's a really nice way, The Gentle Path.
It just sounds good. And yeah, just to resonate with what you said, Mike, absolutely, because people who know me, you know, I never say to people, I'm this perfectly spiritually balanced man. I've got a motorbike, a Honda Blackbird 1100, which will do nearly 200 miles an hour. You know, now I haven't done that on it, right? And I've had loads of bikes over the years. You know, I was out on it yesterday. I had a day for me yesterday, which is rare. You know, I got on my bike and off I went, and I really enjoyed it. And sometimes I won't go 100, nearly 200 miles an hour, but sometimes it's like, yeah, right, lovely, you know. And sometimes, you know, I can be doing about 100 miles an hour and the front wheels hovering off. You know, it's like complete madness, but I'm a human being, you know. Males can be quite reckless. Sometimes I need a bit of that danger. It's stupid. I'm 62. My arms ache when I'm on the bike sometimes. And it's the same in my car. I like my car. And sometimes, you know, you'll have a little mess around with someone who's coming up behind you. I'm a human being. I've got my foibles. I've got my little things that I try and get over. But what we've got to know is what is our friend and what's not. And what knocks us off kilter, you know, sometimes by doing something a bit silly, okay, you learn another lesson. You know, I like jumping in the freezing cold sea. Because people say, oh, isn't that a shock? Well, yeah, that's why I do it. Or having a cold shower, because it freezes you, it resets you, you know. But then you've got to offset it with different things, you know. And we've got to know our enemies, you know. That's what I would say. I mean, years and years ago, I used to do karate when I was over in Cape Town, and I loved it. You know, I'm not saying that to be big and tough. I'm not, you know. You put a gun to my head, I'm dead. But what I did with the karate, I was stopping drinking anyway. But I sort of used that because I was doing karate in a week, and the feeling of that, or walking, like you said, lifts your vibration up. And or if you go for a long walk, you don't really want to drink, you know. Most of the reason we drink is to dull our frustration. A lot of people, when they come in from work, they're so wired, and it dulls their frustration and their mundane sort of, you know, repetitious lives. But by coming home and just curling up on the settee and closing your eyes can do exactly the same thing, you know. But I'm not one of these guys that says don't make any mistakes, you know. And don't put yourself in a vulnerable position. No, I do. I sometimes do a couple of things on my motorbike that maybe I shouldn't, but it gives me a lift. It gives me a bit of a buzz, you know. So life can be really mundane sometimes, but we got to know when we're making mistakes that are hurtful to us and when we're trapped in addictive cycles. And a lot of people don't talk about it because you've got no one to talk to about it, you know, because you'll say, oh, well, you're failing, or you're an addict, or you're this, or you're that. You know, I know some people who are drinking so much it's nearly killing them. You know, other people don't drink at all, and they're really happy as well. So, but I do truly believe we're in the great remembering, the great unraveling, and I truly believe that we're being called back towards ourselves, and people can feel it deep down. And it's no coincidence, Mike, that a lot of people in the circles I work in most of them are wanting to come back now and stop doing those addictive things. And it's not because I've done it. It's been those synchronicities. What? You stopped drinking as well? Wow. Amazing. Isn't it great? It's like, wow, it's another world. You know, it's beautiful. I love not drinking.
I mean, if you look at the statistics in 2020, alcohol sales were up 50 plus percent. And that shows you what people are using it for. Like, that is the evidence of how people use it as a crutch, as an emotional crutch, rather than confronting problems and dealing with it. The turning to something. And I think it's always about self-honesty. For you, it might be, I was drinking a bottle of wine every night, and that was a huge problem. For me, it was, I was drinking a bottle or two bottles a week. People might laugh and say, what's the point, Mike? Why would you stop that? Because I've got self-honesty. Those two bottles, if I had two bottles in one night or two bottles across the week, that still affected me. And I was asking myself, what can I do to improve myself as a human being? What's an easy win? An easy win was just cutting out those two. Do you need two bottles? Of course you don't need two bottles. There's nothing that I need there, but I was still using it as a crutch. After a long day, if I was doing 10, 15 hours a day, I'd say to my wife, should we have a beer? So what? It's one bottle, people might say, but I knew I was using it as a crutch after a long day. And that was exactly it. It was self-honesty. So I'd say start there. If you are honest with yourself and you don't feel you've got any issues, then fantastic. If your life's going great and you're happy and you don't feel you need to improve on where you are, then don't. I would say you're doing the right thing. But I think we've all got space to improve. Now, whether that includes alcohol or not, that's up to the individual, isn't it? But I think that's probably a great place to leave part one, Jason. I've got so many more questions that I want to get into in part two. I want to actually talk about what the solutions are. I want to find out what your solutions are. And I want to talk a little bit more about building communities. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Anastasia community, but we kind of got completely off topic.
Yeah. Louise has got all the books here. She's based it on that, in fact, yeah.
Oh, no wonder it sounded the same. Okay, you're the perfect person to speak to about this. For listeners that don't know, the Anastasia, as I call it, it was a Russian mystic. And now there's a whole global movement on building communities where people are going back to the land, living communally, but having separate spaces, 1 hectare plots where they grow food, then shared spaces for the community, for shared parenting, homeschooling. And it's all about going back to living close to nature, not putting toxins and vaccines and all that crap in our body, and trying to awaken spiritually again. So I'm really inspired by it. I'm not sure I would be completely in line with all they think or all that stuff, but I'd love to talk to you about it, especially as somebody who's got the books. I don't have the books yet, but I've been researching a lot, at least recently. So maybe we can start part two with that, Jason. Maybe that's where we can go to.
Yeah, for sure. And before we go to that, are we still recording now?
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to say to people as well, because when you said it, I thought, God, often people don't try new things because it's too immense, isn't it? But I remember someone said, I heard someone say once that it might have been Wayne Dyer. He's a very, a lot of people don't know him, but I read all his books years ago, and one of them was called You'll See It When You Believe It, not I'll Believe It When I See It, right? And I remember, I think it was Wayne Dyer said, perfectionism equals paralysis, right? And that was the same when I was starting my book. I wanted to write my book. Same when I was going to do the conferences, when I wanted to do what I'm doing now, when I wanted to play an instrument. It's like perfectionism can equal paralysis. When I was learning to paint, you know, it's like, well, if you're thinking it's going to be perfect, you'll never begin. Now, I want to put a caveat in before I finish this quick thing. If you're walking across Niagara Falls on a piece of wire, you know, with the thing, then okay, you know, don't do what my dad used to teach me. Don't wonder how to do it, then wonder how you did it, right? But with doing anything, whether it's a community that you're going to start, if you think it's going to be perfect, you're never going to do it. So start with the tools you've got and create something. Then, okay, if it goes wrong, you can keep adjusting as you go. You've got to leave doors open for adjustments, which is the same with anything you do, whether it's tinkering with a car or a motorbike or your own health or your own consciousness. There's room for improvements all the time, but don't not do anything because you think it might not work and you want it to be perfect. That's a big mistake. And one more thing, Mike, when you're talking about the dirtiness of drinking all the time and feeling dirty, do you know I used to change my clothes every single day, full new clothes, right? Because I wanted to shake off the day before, right? And no one would know. It wasn't like I was staggering around. And again, back to Wayne Dyer, he said to his friend, because he stopped drinking as well, he said to his friend, if I know it's wrong, why do I keep doing it? And he said, Wayne, you do it because it's home. So remember that, everybody. If you want to change something, often you can keep doing it because it's become the normal thing you do and you don't know anything outside it. But just do something different. Walk a different way to work. Walk a different way home from work. Don't walk past the off license, right? Do you know what I'm trying to say? You know?
Yeah, that's great advice. Great advice, Jason. And yeah, I think that's the beauty of being a human being, is that free will that God gave us. People say, well, you know, why wouldn't God just come and fix the world and make everything perfect for us? Why? Because that's totalitarianism. That's exactly what our great leaders are promising us, that if we just cede sovereignty to them, they'll fix everything for us and we won't have to worry again. Free will is the choice. It's where you can choose to create. You can be a co-creator of this reality. You can create beautiful things. You can have children. What a beautiful act. Or you can destroy. And we can do that to ourselves too. We can turn ourselves into something magnificent. The options and roads are all open to us, or we can self-destruct. And that is, that's the art of living, right? Trying to find that balancing act. And we're all on that same journey, so we don't judge each other. And I hope listeners have not taken it personally that we discussed alcohol like that, because I know a lot of people do like a drink. And like I said, I like a drink sometimes, but we're just talking about the spiritual aspect. And I think it's important to do that because, you know, they are putting obstacles in our way, Jason. Geez, they're putting a lot of them. And it's a difficult world. And I totally get why people might find crutches.
Everyone knows if they're trapped, Mike, on a very deep level. At Christmas, I was up with my wife up near her mum's. She said, oh, I'd love a Bailey's, because my wife drinks very occasionally, you know. And I said, well, let's go in the pub and have one. I didn't think, I can't go in the pub. I'm vulnerable. It was great to walk in the pub and actually be in my power and think, I'm not going to have a drink. Wow. You know, and she had a Bailey's and I had a cup of tea and it was great. But what we've also got to remember to finish the thing with a drink is just remember, everybody, it's one of the most addictive drugs in the world. And people say, no, it's not. A friend of mine's come off heroin, crack cocaine. He still can't get off the drink. And he wants to. They even put something in his stomach that if he drank alcohol, he'd spew up. Or even if he put perfume on, he would be sick. So alcohol is one of the least talked about, most addictive drugs in the world. And it's just when you think, oh, it's 6 o'clock. It's like, shall I have a drink? Shan't I have a drink? Your body is saying, where is it? I need it. And there's other things you could talk about as well with maybe other entities were saying, yeah, we've got someone there. There's another one we've got. They call it the demon booze for a reason. Gin. How about the gin? You know, gin, the entities. And I've seen people come in and into town here and they don't drink. And then suddenly they start drinking. And a few years later, I see the same person yesterday, actually, outside my shop, muttering to themselves, shouting at people. It's very dangerous. And a lot of people I know who drink at home probably drink more than that person. except they keep it to themselves. They're trying to be normal as well, and they're probably struggling as much as that person is. Big subject, you know.
Awesome. I'll put the links in the description. Jason, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm really excited to get into part two with you.
Great to speak to you, Mike, and well done for everything you're doing. It's good to speak to you. You're a special man.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
What you are basic. Deep, deep down, far, far in, is simply the fabric and structure of existence itself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
Honestly expressing yourself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
The fabric and structure of existence.
Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.